Well, if you would turn in your Bibles to Psalm 131 this morning. Psalm 131 will conclude our series, our summer series through the Psalms this morning. Looking at Psalm 131, it's only three verses. Psalm 131, that doesn't mean shorter time. It just means three verses. We'll see. Psalm 131. In the spring of 2020, or as many of you all know of it, COVID, ESPN aired what was titled The Last Dance. Essentially, this is meant to be a retelling of the story of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, with specific emphasis upon his final year in that era in the 1990s. Growing up in the 80s and 90s, I loved watching Michael Jordan play. Likely many of you from that time period, and even now, of course, know who that is. You didn't have to be a big basketball fan to know that name. He became a household name. He was on Gatorade commercials, McDonald's commercials, all sorts of endorsements and fame. In fact, I can remember back, I think it was in the early 90s, winning a contest through McDonald's and winning some of his stuff, gear, winning a coat and winning a bag, and all because and I chose that because of Michael Jordan. Nevertheless, this documentary highlights the glory of the Chicago Bulls and the glory that was him, so to speak, Michael Jordan, back 25, 30 years ago. But here's the thing, all of that was in the past. Yes, I and likely millions have seen that documentary since then. But if you talk to Michael Jordan now, he's searching for something that he cannot find. A little over 10 years ago, the basketball icon turned 50, so he's about 60 now. And when he did, ESPN decided to interview him and get his thoughts on what it was like growing older and moving further away from the glory days. And here is some of what he said. He said, "I would give up everything now to go back and to play the game of basketball." Now, mind you, this is the first billionaire athlete. He has people waiting on him hand and foot. Anything, he still has those restless nights, unsatisfied days, unfulfilled desires. To conclude, the writer of this article says, "The man has left the court, but the addictions won't leave the man. He has no peace." What we see this morning is what we might call a psalm of triumph. Triumph because the writer, who we assume is King David here, has found not victory over his enemies, although he had, nor has he found earthly riches and treasure, although likely he owned much of it. But no triumph because within his own soul, he's found peace with God. So as we look this morning at Psalm 131, let's see what it means to know the God of peace and to find peace within our own souls. Psalm 131, verses 1 through 3. "O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. For I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore." So like the psalm we looked at last week, Psalm 121, not only would we call this a psalm of triumph, but this was also known, as the subscription says here, as a song of ascent. If you remember what that meant that as people were ascending upwards towards the hill that was Jerusalem, they would reflect upon and even sing these songs as they were leading and going towards the time of gathering in Jerusalem for festivals and for different seasonal gatherings. So they would, like they did Psalm 121, they would sing, "From where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord." They would sing this psalm of protection. But at the same time, they might also sing Psalm 131, as they were checking their own hearts and preparing to meet with the Lord to see within their own hearts, their hearts of peace. And they would do so even when their circumstances were not ideal. You think about that. It's an interesting way to kind of think through peace, peace through unideal circumstances. In reality, circumstances are never completely ideal, are they? Think about your own life. You might say, "Hey, we're sitting in a good time right now," but there's always a bill to pay. There's always a job to do. There's always a conflict to work through. There's always some sort of uncertainty ahead. But nevertheless, I think we recognize that some circumstances are less than ideal than others. And there are situations that perhaps hit us harder than what might be considered the normal for us. Yet it's often in those unexpected ones that can get us the most. That problem that escalates, the friend that turns their back, the unexpected issue. But it's in the midst of these difficulties that what we've seen over the last 7 or 8 weeks in thinking through the Psalms hopefully has brought a level of comfort to your own soul. But in a specific way, remembering Psalm 131 ought to be one that brings your soul peace. Look with me at how that might be by first looking at peace through humility here in Psalm 131. So in that same interview that I mentioned earlier, when the writer of this piece delved a little bit deeper into Jordan's personal life, he discovered something. Here's what he discovered. He said, Jordan is at the center of several overlapping universes. At the top of a billion-dollar brand at Nike, at that time, the owner of the Hornets basketball team, he's at the center of his own company with dozens of employees and contractors on the payroll. In case anyone in the inner circle forgets who's in charge, they also have code names by which the private security team knows each one of his team, especially when they travel. So Estee, who is his personal manager, is Venom, is her code name. His friend George, his code name is Butler. His wife Yvette, her code name is Harmony. And Jordan, his code name is Yahweh. Which, of course, by the gasps, you know that means God. Yahweh, I am who I am. I will be who I will be. Now, I don't have to tell you that that's not exactly a nickname that fosters a bit of humility. When talking about this, Jordan, he goes on to say, he goes, my ego is so big that I expect certain things now. But as the article continues, that's the natural consequence of life and living life on top. Jordan is used to being, as the article goes on, the most important person in every single room he enters. Even going a step further, in the lives of everyone he meets, people cater to his every whim. Now put that segment with the article of the one I just mentioned earlier. Jordan considers himself the most important person in the universe with the code name of Yahweh. And put that with what we said earlier, with the man who cannot find peace. And you have a very interesting dilemma here. A man who has it all, but yet is still restless. Who does he sound like? He sounds like the writer of Ecclesiastes, doesn't he? The man who bought land, the man who had all wisdom, the man who had women and inventions and possessions with no fears or worries, and yet in the end looked back at it all and said, it's all meaningless. And like Jordan, he would have given up all of it to simply find a moment of peace. But here's the problem. The way of peace is not through finding more, but through less. Look at verse 1 here again. Oh Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. That's peace through humility. Now, as we know, the opposite of humility is pride, right? And when it comes to pride, there are generally two kinds that we can identify. The one kind is pride of thinking that you are something. The other kind of pride might be the one who wants to become something. The one who thinks that they are something will expect everyone to wait on them hand and foot and perhaps even call themselves God. A place where very few of us will ever find ourselves. The other kind of pride, though, is someone who wants to become something greater than who they are or have something greater than what they have. This attitude usually comes from the person who thinks they deserve better or thinks they deserve more than what they have, even if they won't come out and actually admit it. Oftentimes, whatever side you are on, your attitude may display itself in similar ways. So then I want you to do this with me for just a second. Consider your own heart here for just a minute. We're walking through this. I want you to be a little bit introspective here just for a second and listen to these descriptions of pride and ask yourself these questions. Are you often easily angered? Are you ungrateful? Do you focus on more on what you don't have than what you do have? Do you talk about yourself too much? Do you have to be in control? Do you care too much about what others think? Are you able to accept criticism? Are you overly defensive? Do you minimize your own sin while maximizing other people's sin? Are you impatient? And then lastly, do you like attention? Now, pride can be very subtle, and it often covers itself in some pretty weak ways. Be careful that you don't only see this as some arrogant and blatantly boastful type of attitude. You know, the person who goes out there and says, I'm everything, you should worship me. That's not the way it always displays itself. Because pride can also show itself through the craving and the longing for the attention and the approval of others as well. But here's the thing. David, again, the writer here in verse 1, he renounces all of that. And those traveling up to Jerusalem, they're reminding their own hearts as they check themselves that humility is the way to peace. And look at how they do that. Again, verse 1, my heart is not lifted up. I'll put aside the emotions and the desires that would fill up inside of me and desire to be greater or crave something that might make me greater than others. I'll put that aside. I'll put aside the heart that wants to be lifted up and exalted. The next, he goes on and he says, my eyes are not raised too high. I'll not go looking for more. I will not see myself as better than others. I will not try to use my eyes, or we could even say any other part of my face for that matter, to communicate some sort of greatness about myself. You can picture that, what that looks like, right? I will not use my eyes or other parts of my face to show and communicate that I'm better than others. You know, the eye roll you might give to people, the lifted up nose, the curled upper lip. But then the last part of verse 1, I do not occupy myself with things too great or too marvelous for me. I will not live my life as if I'm better. I will not act as if I deserve more. Quite often, we see these types of habits come through in spending, right? Spending beyond our means. A lifestyle that says you deserve more when reality says differently. It's often in difficult circumstances that these types of attitudes suddenly come out in our hearts and through our eyes and through our actions. It's easy to spot this in a man who calls himself Yahweh and say, yeah, that's pride. But when circumstances are not what we hoped they would be, or the situation turns a little bit further away from what we expected, that's when, as we saw in Psalm 131, we need the shade of the Lord to protect us from the sun that's bearing down hard upon us. What I mean by that is that the difficulties of life, they often function, as we see in James chapter 1, as the sun. And if left unprotected, our hearts, like a weak plant within the sun, can begin to wither. And when we begin to wither, the temptation grows. And if not checked, will then turn into sin. And the sin will not only put up a wall between you and God, but it'll do so between you and others. And it'll bring turmoil into your soul and begin to manifest itself through these subtle forms of pride. I don't deserve this. I should have this. Why am I living like this? These people should act like this towards me. But instead, secondly, not only should we seek peace through humility, but we should seek peace through contentment. So the result of pride, we're looking at, okay, the opposite of humility being pride, but then the result of that pride is a discontent heart. But the root of peace is contentment found through humility. So let me try to explain this, and let's look at this from King David's life. Again, King David, we're saying he's the one who's written this psalm. That's what has been thought through the ages that David wrote this psalm. He would surely have written this out of his own experience. In his own life, there would have been many points, I'm sure, when he was content. But there were other points that we can likely highlight very quickly, of which pride would have ruled him. And as we said a second ago, when the circumstances lined up just right, the temptation would have come in, overcome him, and left his heart open to pursuing his sin. So then consider one of this. We've already mentioned this a few times in our series through the Psalms, as we've been looking at many of the Psalms of David. We think of the account of Bathsheba. Consider the circumstance, 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1. And again, in the spring of that year, as we see in 2 Samuel, the time when kings go out into battle, David sent Joab, his commander, and his servants to go with him and all of Israel, but David remained back in Jerusalem. Now, as we saw again a couple weeks ago, the text doesn't exactly say why David stayed back, but it is significant that it says that he did. And what I mean is the writer made a point to say that David stayed back when he should not have done so. It doesn't, again, say why, but I think it could be because David began to see himself as bigger than who he was. Look at this kingdom my hands have brought about. I have conquered my enemies. I do not need to go to the battlefront. The greater faith within himself and what he has built, rather than the God and whom has built him. So then with this attitude already going on in his heart, the situation you see is beginning to be set up. Satan takes advantage of the pride that's deep within David's heart at this point, and we read this a few verses later in 2 Samuel chapter 11. Verse 2, it happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch where he was walking on the roof of the king's house that he saw from his roof a woman who was bathing. Verse 4, so he sent a messenger to go get her. And to spare details, she gets pregnant right off that encounter. And we see here this progression, right? Pride, temptation comes. He already thinks highly of himself. He didn't go to war. I don't need to. Look what I've built. And then this level of discontentment begins to fill his own heart. And then I receive what it is that I think I deserve, thinks highly of himself, shown through the fact that he brings Bathsheba to himself and there commits sin. And from there, no peace. Think perhaps even in your own life, if you've had a pattern, not exactly like David, hopefully, but a pattern to where you've thought through of the discontent in your own heart leading to sin. Now, here's how we knew that David had no peace after his sin. And we see that when conviction finally sets in and leads him to confess his sin. We see in Psalm 51, verse 8, where David says, "Let me hear joy and gladness. Let the bones of which you have broken rejoice." Verse 12, "Restore to me the joy of your salvation." Well, what do we infer from that? Well, I think we can infer that there was a lack of joy, and instead there was sorrow. His bones were weak, his body ached. There was no peace within his heart. Even within his own family, there was no peace because of his sin. God had created strife and division and even took the child that resulted from the action with Bathsheba. See the progression? Pride leads to discontentment, leads to no peace. This showed up again in David's life when he tried to count his people. 2 Samuel chapter 24. David, in his own pride over how powerful he was, began to rely upon his own strength once again for victory. Tells Joab, the commander of his army, to go out and to count all of his fighting men. You can imagine what this would have done to a king to know that he has hundreds and thousands upon thousands of men who will fight for his kingdom. Joab knows that this is wrong, begs David to back away from this order. But David, what with the pride in his own heart, discontent, perhaps in not knowing the fullness of his own strength, has his men counted. And what, as a result, no peace. Judgment from the Lord came for David's failure to rely upon him. Going back to the article about Michael Jordan, the pride of his own heart, which leads to discontentment, rules his life from day to day. So much so that, like David in these two instances, he's not satisfied with the circumstances around him, so he continues to search for more. As the writer in that article I read earlier goes on, he says, "Jordan might have stopped playing basketball, but the rage is still there. The fire remains, which is why he searches for release, whether on the golf course or at the blackjack table. Why he spends so much time and energy now with his team that he owns, the Charlotte Hornets, and why he dreams and dreams of returning to play into glory. The man who reached the pinnacle of his skill and his profession, no one better than him, discontent with his life and still searching. No one greater than David in his point of life hit points of discontentment and was searching. Again, Jordan seemed content somewhat in his circumstances when he was on the top. But when things change, he began looking for new situations, new opportunities, more external events and games and possessions to find his contentment within. And as a result, what? No peace. So what's the problem here? The problem is that contentment cannot be found in our circumstances. Why? Well, because one, we change. But then two, circumstances change. You see, nothing in your life or in this world is stable. In a flash, it can all change. We change, we grow older, and as a result, we grow weaker. We can't sleep anymore. Our tastes change. We don't see as well anymore. We don't hear as well anymore. We can't remember anymore. We're unstable people. But then our circumstances, right? Our job is not there anymore. Our parents move in. Our children move out. Friends move on. Our health changes. Nothing is stable. But you know what pride wants to do? It wants to convince us otherwise. You're the best. You deserve more. You know what you're doing. You can handle it. Your job will always be there. How would they function without you there? Your body will always hold up. You take such good care of yourself. You will always have someone to lean on because you're such a good friend. But here's the common factor. When this is your thinking, the source of your confidence is you. And because you are your own confidence, you'll find contentment in the circumstances that you have created around yourself. But that's a very dangerous place to be. Listen to what Puritan writer Jeremiah Burroughs says in his book titled The Rare Jewel of Christian Contentment. He compares contentment that comes from circumstances with the warming of your clothes next to a fire. He says, to be content as a result of some external thing is like warming a man's clothes by the fire. But to be content through an inward disposition of the soul is like the warmth that a man's clothes have from the natural heat of the body. A man who is healthy in his body puts on his clothes and perhaps at first on a cold morning may feel cold, but after he has put them on, in a little while they are warm. Now how did they get warm? They were not near the fire. No, it came from the natural heat of his body. Now, when a sickly man, the natural heat of those whose body is deteriorated, puts on his clothes, they do not get hot for a long time. He must warm them by the fire, and even then they will soon become cold again. The fire may keep us warm for now, but what happens when the fire goes out? There must be a sort of heat from within. See, pride searches for peace in external things. But humility searches for peace through contentment in God. And that's what David learns in verse 2. He says, I have quieted my soul. We ask a question as we look at this, and I think it's helpful when we come to the scriptures. Okay, how has he calmed and quieted his soul? Well, he goes on. He goes, like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child, my soul within me. You've been around a baby when they're hungry? Not a pleasant sound, rather. Talking specifically about an infant that's looking and screaming for its mother to come and feed them. What happens when mom's not around? Let's put ourselves back into the day when this was written. It's not as though now we can just say, well, you get the bottle of the refrigerator and you heat up the bottle and you got some milk and there you go. No, back then, mother was the source of life, the only source of life. And when mom was gone, there is no contentment. The idea here is that a temporary situation was seen as the source of life. But when that is taken away, the period of weaning must occur. Before contentment can be found where it should be found, what we have here is a continual reminder of what we see throughout all the Psalms. It's almost as if we come again to another Psalm and the Lord is seeking to teach us something through it. Quite often we view the world as unstable because of the evil one around us. Yes, we see Satan is at work. Yes, we see him again, 1 Peter 5:8, roaring like a lion, seeking for someone who can devour, causing situations to occur that might lead us into sin. But have you ever thought that perhaps the world is unstable because God is weaning us off of ourselves and our contentment here? And what he's trying to do is teach us to humble ourselves and instead find our contentment in him? Listen to what Charles Spurgeon says about the weaning process in the Christian life. He says, at last there must be an end to the suckling period. And then a battle begins. The child is denied his comfort and therefore he frets and worries or sinks and sulks. It is facing its first great sorrow and its in sore distress. Yet time brings not only alleviations, but the ending of the conflict. The boy ere long is quite content to find his nourishment at the table with his brothers, and he feels no lingering wish to return to those dear fountains from which he once sustained his life. We don't always know what God is doing through the circumstances of our lives. And quite often that can be painful, just like the process of a child being weaned from its mother. But those who trust in the Lord, there they find their souls calm and quieted. There's peace. How do we know that? How do we know that those who have forsaken pride and found contentment in the Lord will find peace? Because thirdly, we see that peace is found through hope. Verse 3 here. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. Now I think as we look at this, it would be unreasonable to think that there's no connection between verse 2 and 3. It's not as though David is writing this, okay, weaning my soul off of this, and then he comes and he says, let me end my psalm by saying, hope in the Lord this time forth and forevermore. No, verse 2 had nothing to do with the Lord or nothing to do with God here, or if contentment had nothing to do with God, then why would our writer call others to hope in God in verse 3? But there is a connection here. Our writer is saying, since I have found my contentment and my calm and my soul quieted, I have done so by turning to the Lord and resting in his power and in his grace and in his wisdom. Therefore, now I call all of Israel to join me in this, to put your hope in him and find your rest in him. Calm your troubled soul in his presence. Listen, if you're here this morning, you're not a Christian. I want to call you like the psalmist does here to find your hope in God. Turn away from looking inwardly. Turn away from looking to the things that you have built or the favorable circumstances that might surround you. For trusting in them is not only sin, but it will lead you to perpetual discontentment. And by nature, that's all of our tendency, isn't it? To find contentment elsewhere as we search for peace. And this trend, it's not new with our generation. It started all the way back in the fall of the first man and the first woman, Adam and Eve, when they turned away from the Lord and they sought in their own pride to find contentment within themselves and within the circumstances around them. But God made a way back to him. He has provided a way to overcome the false contentment that we often find through this world and our sin, and that way is through his son, Jesus Christ. Jesus, who came and lived the perfect life, who lived a life where his soul was calm and quieted before the Lord, he died to pay the penalty of our sin and our false hopes as he contentedly and peacefully went to the cross in obedience to the will of God his Father. But then he rose from the dead so that we might be forgiven of our sins, restored back to God the Father, to then have a hope in him and not in anything else that is temporary or in us or from this world. So if you're searching for peace today, turn to Jesus. Turn away from your endless searching, and through Jesus, receive a hope in God that will fulfill the greatest and the deepest yearnings of your soul by bringing you to himself and making himself the only source of hope that you will ever find in this world. You ever thought that verse 3 here is also a clear call to evangelism for us? David is not only proclaiming, look, I found my hope in the Lord, but he's saying, Israel, find your hope in the Lord with me. Essentially, he's saying, I found peace through humbling myself and finding contentment in the Lord, and now my hopes are set in him. And the call for us then is to call others to come and find their hope in the Lord with us. You ever thought that that's just simply what evangelism is? I have sought and I have found the Lord through Jesus Christ. Come and trust in Jesus Christ with me. It's a clear call throughout all the Psalms that we've gone through. Essentially, two ways in which you can live your life. We saw in Psalm 1, one is the path of the righteous who are firmly planted before the Lord, or you can follow the path of the wicked, which is like chaff and will be blown away. The path of contentedness through Christ, or discontentment and be blown away by the cares of this world. You see Psalm 34, the man who turns away from evil and seeks peace, or the one who turns away from God and pursues their own path. Psalm 63, the one who thirsts for God in a dry and weary land, or the other one, again, who turns away from the Lord and is left to the depths of this earth. On and on we could go with the psalmist calling us to turn away from our way of wickedness, to turn away from our self-reliance, to turn away from our hopeless despair, and instead to turn to the Lord, to seek the path of righteousness and pursue peace. The call is especially relevant to us now in the world that surrounds us as fear reigns in the hearts of many, as anxiety continues to well up within the hearts of many, as discontentment and restlessness is everywhere that we find. In reality, that's the way our world has always been. And people are always looking for somewhere to turn. And when they turn inward, when they turn to a different external man-made situation, the stirring, it only grows greater, for it too will only be found fleeting. For just like Michael Jordan, the peace that you seek isn't available on a basketball court or a golf course. It's not found in the ideal circumstance or having more of what you think you need and what you're seeking after. The peace that you seek isn't in your situation changing either. But instead, it is found on a little hill outside of Jerusalem. There, as Matt Schmeher says, Yahweh incarnate hung in the place of sinners so that wannabe Yahwehs like you and me might have peace with God. This morning, find calmness, find your soul quieted by humbly trusting in the Lord, content with his plan today and with every day that you come to, hoping in him from this time forth and forevermore. Amen. Let's pray.